Good morning and welcome to Queen's Law Pro Bono Radio. I'm your host, Herleen Sharma. Queen's Law Pro Bono Radio discusses interesting and off-center legal topics that aim to make legal discussions more accessible to you. We strive to stimulate interest and provide information while also being entertaining. This week's show is on British Columbia's change to their possession laws. Before we start the show, we would like to say that the views expressed on the show do not necessarily reflect the views of the producers, host, or Queen's University Faculty of Law. This podcast does not contain legal advice. Pro Bono Students Canada is a student organization. This podcast was prepared with the assistance of PBSC Queen's Law student volunteers. PBSC students are not lawyers, and they are not authorized to provide legal advice. The podcast contains general discussion of certain legal and related issues only. If you require legal assistance, please consult a lawyer. As I previously had commented, today I will be discussing the change in British Columbia's drug possession laws and its impact across the province. I was born and have lived in BC my entire life, so this topic is one that is a lot more personal to me. Since the change in the possession laws that took place in January of 2023, I have found myself in countless conversations with friends and family back home about whether its impact has been positive or negative. As this change in policy is quite groundbreaking in not only BC but also in Canada, I was under the impression that even though I was moving to Kingston, Ontario, everyone would have been aware of this. However, it wasn't until I was talking to a group of friends after class that I'd mentioned this policy change in passing, and I received quite a bit of puzzled looks as they were unfamiliar that BC had taken these steps to decriminalization. My hope in today's show is not only to provide you with information, but also increase interest on the topic, given that drug use and addiction is not an isolated issue in BC, but also has its effects all over Canada and even globally. It is critical to take concrete steps to resolve this issue, and one way to do so is to hear about strategies taken by other provinces and even other countries. On January 31st, 2023, British Columbia became the first province in Canada to take a novel approach towards efforts of decriminalizing drugs to aid the opioid crisis and rising incarceration rates related to drug possession. This policy change comes almost 6 years after the province of BC officially declared that the significant increase in drug-related overdoses and deaths was a public health emergency attributed to the opioid crisis. The announcement of this state of emergency allowed medical health professionals to collect more robust information on overdoses to help identify where risks may arise from and to create action plans that can be helpful in either warning the public against the use or to protect those that have already used. To those unfamiliar with the rise of the opioid crisis, according to the American Public Health Organization, the Control for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, it has three distinct waves. It all begins in the 1990s with the increasing prescription of these narcotics, which led to an increase in overdose deaths. And then in the second wave of 2010, there's a rapid increase in the deaths involving the specific opioid heroin. However, it is the third wave in 2013 that has had the lasting effects in British Columbia. In this wave, there has been an increase in deaths involving a synthetic opioid manufactured with mainly fentanyl. According to Dr. Leanna Wen, a professor of health policy and management at George Washington University, interviewed by CNN on March 23, 2013, fentanyl, which is an extremely strong opioid, almost 50 to 100 times stronger than morphine, is being manufactured illegally and mixed with other drugs. Unfortunately, many are unaware of this mixing of fentanyl and other supplies of drugs, and they cannot tell the difference by just looking at the drug. And as it only takes a very, very small amount of this opioid, as it is extremely potent, many can easily take more than they should, which has contributed towards the rapid increase in overdoses and deaths. This opioid quickly causes drowsiness and sedates the user, and within minutes, it can lead to death. Given the state of emergency, the province of BC, which has had the most lasting effects of this opioid crisis, has decided to introduce a decriminalization course of action to combat this issue. As this is my very personal view, decriminalization is absolutely critical to combat the opioid crisis and to minimize the stigma against those who fall susceptible to drugs and narcotics so they can reach out for the help that they need. According to BC Emergency Health Services, or the BCEHS for short, since 2016, there has been a total of a 75% total increase in overdose events. And the latest statistics from 2022 shows that 33,654 calls were made in relation to overdose. 2022 also experienced 2 months with more than 3,000 overdose calls, with a new daily record set on January 19, 2022, with 203 overdose calls made just that day. Although this was a 5% decrease from the previous year, 2021, the harsh reality is that this issue has continued to spread throughout communities across BC. Since the declaration of the opioid crisis being acknowledged as a public health emergency in 2016, there has been 13,112 deaths, and over a quarter of a million people remain at risk of injury or death, according to a CBC article released in November of 2023. In October of 2023 alone, the number of unregulated drug deaths equates to 6.1 deaths per day, and overall 45 deaths per 100,000 people. Given these statistics, it is painfully obvious that an innovative approach needs to be taken to make genuine efforts to help this crisis. One way of doing so is through decriminalization. The British Columbia government page defends its new drug possession regulation with the argument that it will help reduce barriers and stigma that people face, which deter them from accessing life-saving supports and services. It is vital to recognize that substance use is a public health matter, not just a criminal justice issue. According to Rebecca Jessiman, MA, and Doris Payer, PhD, who released a policy brief in June of 2018 titled Decriminalization Options and Evidence on the Canadian Centre on Substance Use and Addiction, found that decriminalization as a policy strategy is an extremely effective way to reduce the harms of substance use, especially for those prosecuted for simple drug possessions. The goal here is to mitigate the harms towards those that use illicit drugs, such as criminal records, stigma, overdose, and more. These wide range of policy strategies would include non-criminal penalties, such as fines, mandatory education, or harm reduction and treatment services. The data they have obtained from other countries in Europe show a very clear link between more punitive approaches to drug use having higher rates of drug-related deaths. However, countries with strategies such as drug checking services, supervised consumption sites, and prescription maintenance programs show improved social functions such as a decrease in illegal sources of income, increased family engagement, and housing stability. Further, there is a decrease in criminal activity, decrease of contaminated drugs on the market, and it provides opportunities for intervention, education, and referral to services. Now, before I go on to discuss the steps that BC is taking, I want to discuss the more so legal landscape of Canada. So in Canada, the regulation of drugs is done at a federal level, but it's not under the criminal code. Rather, it is regulated by a federal body known as the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act, or the CDSA. So any offense under the act are generally prosecuted by federal prosecutors. Currently, Section 4, Subsection 1 of the CDSA provides that, except as authorized under the regulations, no person shall possess a substance included in Schedule 1, 2, or 3. So for reference, the schedules to the Act set out specific categories of controlled substances, as well as certain devices that can be used in the manufacture or distribution of controlled substances. Opioids are in particular considered a Schedule 1 drug. Now that we have that information, British Columbia is taking concrete steps to work towards decriminalization as of January 31st, 2023, when Health Canada granted BC an exemption under the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act until January 31st of 2026. So this exemption allows adults over 18 years of age in BC to not be arrested or charged for opioid possessions up to 2.5 grams. This includes drugs such as heroin, morphine, fentanyl, crack, powder cocaine, meth, and MDMA, or more commonly called ecstasy. So if an adult is found in possession of these drugs within 2.5 grams, they will not be criminally charged and the drugs will not be seized. However, this exemption does not apply to K-12 schools, childcare facilities, playgrounds, splash pads, wading pools, and skate parks. The government of BC defends their decision to decriminalization by relying on international evidence, similarly to the previously discussed article, Decriminalization Options and Evidence, which looks at areas in Portugal, Germany, Lithuania, Australia, the Czech Republic, and Oregon in the USA. Here, evidence has shown that decriminalization reduces harms associated with substance use and criminalization, as Portugal has shown that since implementing decriminalization, deaths from overdose and substance use have stayed below the EU averages, and prisoner sentencing has decreased from 40% to 15%, which alleviates pressure on the criminal justice system. The hope of the BC government is to meet these similar goals of decreasing prisoner sentencing and alleviating pressure on the criminal justice system. Now, given that a year has passed since it's been enacted, the question is, has anything profoundly changed? Now, before I go on to discuss the specifics, I do just want to make it clear that trying to measure the success of this policy is extremely difficult due to the many factors that need to be considered. However, according to one article from Global News released September 8th, 2023, fears of this failure of this approach are apparent, not only through political backlash, but also through institutions continuing to exploit those most vulnerable. For example, many right-wing organizations and politicians have been pushing for more police officers to be recruited and be put into areas known for being hotspots for drug use, without any actual evidence indicating that there is actual call for an increase in police presence. Further backlash comes from Federal Conservative Party leader Pierre Poilievre, who vowed to scrap the policy if he is made prime minister and instead opt for an approach that focuses on more treatment and recovery initiatives. Furthermore, when interviewing Kate Kevdu, founder of Uniting Northern Drug Users Stigma, she reported that the RCMP has continued to confiscate drugs within the legal quantities without leaving paper trails, noting that they have done so, and has also noticed an increase in police harassment. This behavior poses a grave threat to those that are using, as confiscating the drugs can lead to severe withdrawal symptoms that can cause tremors, severe flu-like symptoms, and even death. Confiscating the drugs only forces individuals to resort to other methods to obtain drugs that can be more harmful and dangerous. The mayor of Nelson, Janice Morris, hopes the efforts of decriminalization will come to fruition in the long term, with the reduction of stigma and having areas designated for safe injection. However, further pushback comes from government bodies once again, as discussed in a CBC article from October 4, 2023, that discusses the introduction of a bill to ban the use of drugs in many public spaces in BC. Although this was not passed, it would have banned the use of substances within 6 meters of all building entrances, bus stops, within 15 meters of playgrounds, spray and wading pools, and skate parks, and in parks, beaches, and sports fields. Although the goal here is not to criminally punish people and would instead be officers asking them to stop or directing them to another area, this is headed in the opposite direction of decriminalization. This forces those that do use to conceal and isolate their use to potentially unsafe environments, which is an easy path to overdose or even die. Although this was not passed, as I previously mentioned, this shows the tremendous political backlash that is taking place in hopes of hindering the province's efforts to decriminalize drugs. Dr. Cora DeBuck, a research scientist with the BC Center on Substance Use, interviewed by Global News, suggests that although this policy change was an especially important and very symbolic step, it's really only the beginning. To achieve sustainable success in the future, she suggests, and I quote, "From a long-term perspective, moving towards the regulation of drugs, expanding our addiction treatment system, and ensuring that people have access to addiction treatment in the ways that they need, when they want, ensuring that we're adequately supporting prevention and supporting families when they're young and vulnerable communities," end quote. This is further supported by a survey conducted by the BC Center for Disease Control that suggests further solutions and policies are needed to establish a more prominent impact on affected communities, and more importantly, to reduce the frequency of interactions between those that use substances and law enforcement. In this report, it was shown that those that use substances experienced negative and disrespectful interactions with police and confirmed the confiscation of drugs within the legal amount through a qualitative study. Despite BC's historic move to decriminalization on a personal possession of certain illicit drugs, there are some legal challenges that could potentially arise. Although I've not been able to find any sources specifically considering this issue, this is an opinion of my own. And I wonder if the exemption could be successfully challenged as an infringement on the federal head of power. Now, before I conclude this podcast, I want to discuss some potential issues that I could see arising from this change in legislation. Now, I am only in my first year, so my knowledge is limited and is mostly opinion, as I could not find any sources considering this issue. But I wonder if this exemption could be successfully challenged as an infringement on the federal head of power. Now, a little bit of context and history. Since the Constitution Act of 1867, domains of law have been allocated to either the federal jurisdiction or the provincial jurisdiction. Some examples of where they may converge would be in trade and commerce, marriage and divorce, but something like criminal law would fall under a federal jurisdiction. Under provincial jurisdiction, you would find municipal institutions, property and civil rights, and local works. Now, while drugs were not specifically mentioned under the Constitution Act, it has been decided that any residual matters not specifically assigned to provinces were given to a federal power, as they do hold power over the criminal law. Given that Health Canada is a federal institution that granted the exemption to the CDSA, another federal jurisdiction, which then gave BC the power to decriminalize drugs, did the federal or provincial jurisdiction overstep their boundaries? Can the federal jurisdiction grant an exemption to just a single province? Can the province create such radical change without accusation that they are encroaching on federal powers? Although arguments can be made in favor of the province, as drug use is viewed as a public health matter, which is a provincial head of power, it'll be interesting to see if any creative challenges are brought by opposition groups over the coming years, particularly if there are any changes in governments at either the federal or provincial level. Now, although the discourse and findings might have been bleak, we have to look towards the more long-term impact of this policy change. The steps taken by BC are in the right direction. With only a year in since the policy change was implemented, one cannot say with confidence that has either failed or succeeded. Rather, I think the most helpful part of this change comes from the recognition of gaps that have resulted since the policy change was implemented. It's really only a matter of time before they are seriously considered and more changes and solutions are provided. For example, a new article from CTV News published on January 11, 2023, found that providing prescriptions of opioids during the pandemic significantly reduced the risk of dying, at almost a 55% reduction if given a one-day supply and 89% if given a four-day supply, as users were given access to safer and cleaner drugs. A panel of experts have suggested that a radical policy change should take place that allows for the sale of non-prescription safe drugs at the same price as street drugs, which would remove the incentive to resell and would provide a safe supply. This is a finding that could heavily impact how BC decides to move forward with its efforts of decriminalization, as it prevents the risk of overdose and death. Drug use and addiction is a very important issue in many countries, and it is critical that steps be taken to helping those that suffer from addiction, that come from a place without stigma and fear persecution, but with empathy. Today's show was produced and hosted by me, Herlene. If you like this interview, you could find more on the Queen's Pro Bono Radio website. Thank you.